your host, Aaron Ripmaster. Welcome to the Man Cave, where joining me tonight to record Diz Dad's podcast number 183 are Bob Chavez.
Good evening, Aaron.
David Nicely.
Good evening, everybody.
And Matt Weir.
Hey, this is Matt Weir.
So tonight on the Diz Dad's podcast, we're talking about vacationing at Walt Disney World with a family of six or more. Big parties are often a challenge, and we're going to try and address some of the issues that you might commonly run into. But before we get to that discussion, I do want to once again thank our podcast sponsor, Fairytale Journeys, an authorized Disney travel planner. The next time your family's planning a vacation to Walt Disney World, Disneyland, Disney Cruise Line, heck, even Adventures by Disney or Disneyland Paris, a Fairytale Journeys travel agent would love to help you by taking the detail headaches away and letting you just focus on the fun. You can check them out at fairytalejourneys.com. All right, guys. Family of six at Walt Disney World or more, and all of you have traveled with large groups like that. Obviously, the first hurdle that you run into is just transportation, traveling with a big group like that. And I think you've each had your own solutions to that issue. So, Bob, why don't we start with you? And when you're traveling with, six or more to Walt Disney World from the middle of the country in St. Louis, how do you deal with it?
Truthfully, we've mastered the overnight drive. We have the minivan because that's what middle of Americans do to travel. We all own minivans. And
not all of us. I don't.
What we'll wind up doing is we'll pack the six or seven, depending on how many are traveling in that particular time. And we'll leave at like three or so in the afternoon. And that way we'll have dinner, get the kids nice and full and tired, and then do the rest of the drive overnight. If they're tired, they sleep, we can arrive in Orlando, with only one driver being a little bit dragging on that first day. And that seems to work for us. When you do the math, the cutoff point for flying from here to Orlando is about 2.5 people. So as soon as you hit that third person, it becomes the cost benefit means you should probably drive. So that's how we approach the drive, given the age of our kids and the people we travel with, is the overnight drive.
All right. And David, how about you?
Well, like Bob, when we went, we actually had to take two minivans. We had five adults and four children on the last trip we took with that many people. So we do not drive straight through. We get to the Florida-Georgia line. We spend the night so that we leave early the next morning and arrive in Orlando before lunchtime.
Okay. So you take the opportunity to get a little rest and maybe hit the parks a little fresher without having, it's the trade-off.
Correct.
Bob willing to put up with one person dragging and, you're trying to do the get everybody there fresh.
Correct. And sanity intact.
Well, see, that's the thing. With Bob, that's already a foregone thing, so.
That's funny. That's funny. Yeah.
All right, so Matt, how about you? You've got a trek that I believe is even longer than Bob's.
Yeah, we're coming from up in Wisconsin and Minnesota. And when we went down with nine people this last time, it was actually two different parties traveling. So that made it a little easier to just have two different flights scheduled and basically meet up at the resort. And once we were there, we did have a minivan rented for a couple of days just for some of the offsite things that we did. But in terms of getting there, they took the flight down and took Magical Express, whereas we flew in somewhere else and drove in.
Okay. And how many were you flying with?
I was flying with four, and the other party was five, so okay. Nine total.
Okay. Because one of the things that to me is I think often a challenge that people who haven't done it before maybe don't think about when you're traveling with six is that if you're flying with six or more people, first of all, if you're flying one of the budget airlines like Southwest that doesn't pre-select seats, I think you've got some challenges there. It's difficult to get six seats altogether, even with a, first group boarding pass. And the other issue really is simply maneuvering in the airport with six. You know, you've got more pieces of luggage to deal with. You've got, you kind of maxed out your number of kids per adult hand with two adults and four kids.
Yeah, and I would imagine those luggage racks that they have at the airports where you can wheel a big pile of luggage around would really help out with that too.
Yeah. That's exactly, I think, where we're headed a little bit, but that's an important tool. You know, they may cost a couple of dollars, but it's worth it. We've used it in the past when we've been traveling with my brother and his family, other places. And, you know, the problem is that if you try to do it without it, there's just not enough hands to cover everything. You know, you've got a kid roaming free if you, you know, grab hold of a bag. The only other alternative we've had is that at times what you know, I'll do is I'll be wheeling a bag in one hand and, you know, the rule is that my son has to keep a hand on the handle of the bag.
Yeah, another thing that they have up at our airport in Minneapolis is curbside check-in of luggage. So if they have that option, that might be another good hand saver.
Yeah, and that's a good example of a way to leverage stuff that you get from Disney for free, right? Because you do the curbside check-in at your home airport, and then when you get to Disney World, you know, they'll pick up your luggage for you as part of Magical Express service. Yeah, now, David, you were mentioning another kind of tricky issue that is worth kind of planning ahead to deal with if you're flying with six or more.
Yeah, you know, timetables, if you're unable to fly directly to Orlando from your home airport, so they either fly to Cincinnati or to Chicago. And depending on when they get there, they could have a very, very tight time. So if you're with a large, it's not just yourself that you have to get around. You may have someone who's, you may be a grandparent who doesn't walk as fast or a small child. Accordingly, you know, it may look good to have a 45-minute layover. In all actuality, at an airport like O'Hare, that could actually cause you to miss your flight.
Yeah, that's a really good point, David. You know, we kind of prioritize the direct flight even over the price of the flight when we fly for just that reason. Because even with two adults and two kids, it's just, you know, a lot of peace of mind, frankly, to know that we're not going to have to sprint across the airport. I mean, Chicago is a great example of a situation where even though you're on the same airline, you can find yourself needing to go, you know, from one terminal to another even in order to catch your continuing flight. And, you know, that's a real challenge to do within a reasonable period of time. You know, you almost have to plan for a longer layover to give yourself time to get there. And now then you've kind of burned away a lot of the advantage of flying, you know, by using up the time sitting around in an airport.
Yeah, and sometimes when it even seems like you have enough time, we've had at least one flight, where it's an hour and 20 minutes plus kind of layover and coming in a little bit late on the front end of it, you know, it can make it pretty tight to get across the big airport.
Yeah. So the way that obviously, you know, you can deal with that. Number one, obviously, several of you choose to drive, and the other is to really prioritize those direct flights, and that can be helpful. Best you can, leverage those services like SkyCaps, curbside check-in, take advantage of Magical Express if somebody else is dealing with the luggage. All right, so we've talked about travel. We talked a little bit about the rental car situation. You know, when you get to Orlando, one of the challenges with a family of six, if you're going to rent a car, is that you've got to rent a larger vehicle. You know, your typical, even a full size car, really only seats five, and you've got a lot. You've got luggage to deal with too. Have any of you done the minivan rental thing in Orlando?
We had a minivan for one day just to get over to Universal and back, because that proved cheaper than getting a Mears shuttle. And that worked out pretty well. But if it had been the entire nine that was trying to get over there, I don't think it would have worked out, because I think the minivan we had only seated seven. And thankfully, three of the people didn't want to go to Universal. They were off going to Fantasia Gardens.
Okay. Yeah, I was going to mention that trick because the 7 does seem to be kind of a cutoff point. You know, you can rent full-size vans, but they're a lot harder to track down. They're not always available and can be really expensive because you kind of jump from the 7-person minivan to the, you know, 15-passenger van, and the cost goes up considerably.
And the 15s just aren't an easy to navigate around through the parks and in those tight parking lots either.
Yeah, I mean, you know, especially even, you know, going from like Disney World to Universal, if you're not really familiar with the streets and you don't, you know, you're relying on maps and GPS to get you places, it's a little harder to make those, you know, maybe a little closer to the stoplight than you'd hoped, lane changes when you're trying to do it in a packed 15-passenger van or even a half-full 15-passenger van.
You know, maybe it's getting ahead of ourselves a bit, but once we were on property and had all the Disney transportation, things just were kind of like no troubles involved, which is great.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good point. And again, another benefit of taking advantage of what is really there and available for you for free. All right, so I think that's probably going to cover the transportation issue pretty well, but the next issue is choosing a place to stay. And, you know, you guys were all dealing mostly with groups that were not just a family of six, but even bigger than six. So why don't we start by talking about the strategies that you guys took when you were, you know, working with a bigger group, and then I'm going to talk about a few of the options when you've got a family of six. The first option, obviously, one option is to go with two rooms, and I think all of you chose sort of versions of the two-room situation, with the exception of, I think, Bob on one of his trips. So, David, why don't you go first this time and talk about your strategy for traveling with, I believe you said it was a group of nine.
Yeah, we looked at a couple different options. We had tried to get two rooms together, but we were told that they could not guarantee that for us. So what we did was rent a two-bedroom villa. We did rent a DVC points, and we stayed at Kidani Village at Animal Kingdom. That way everyone could be together. It also allowed us the opportunity to have breakfast in the room so that as everyone was getting ready, we wouldn't be late getting into the park and then have to stop for breakfast.
Yeah, and actually, something that is a fairly recent change at Walt Disney World, and I just learned about this, doesn't help you in every situation when you're traveling with a large group, but it is now policy at Walt Disney World, if you're traveling with a group where you have more children than adults, so like if you're two adults and four children, more children than adults, and you need two rooms to accommodate your party, they actually will guarantee adjacent or adjoining rooms. And you've got to make the reservations together, but it can be done. And again, it's only in the circumstance where you have more children than adults traveling. And it's a relatively new policy. It makes a lot of sense, frankly. Yeah, in David's case, it wouldn't have mattered because you had five adults and four kids, so they can't guarantee it. But, for example, in Bob's circumstance, often, you know, you're traveling with fewer adults, more kids.
Right. I have four children, so the wife and I have four kids. So that's an interesting development as far as we're concerned, because that's always been we can't really have two rooms because they won't guarantee that we'll all be, you know, next to each other.
Right. So, and then now they will, because they understand that, you know, you're going to have one adult and, you know, two kids in each room. And it just does. I think they just reached the point where they realized that it was to their benefit, you know, to allow those families to be able to know that they were guaranteed to be able to stay together. David, you went the DVC point rental route, and that is one option, gets you sort of a wider range of rooms that are specifically designed to accommodate a larger group. Matt, you chose a slightly different route.
Yeah, initially I was actually looking really seriously at the All-Star Vacation Homes because you can get such a pretty good deal for given the number of people that are going to be able to stay there. You know, there's rates as low as like a few hundred bucks a night for four bedrooms and a number of bathrooms and all that kind of stuff. So that seemed like the most affordable way to do it. My aunt, who is the other party involved, really didn't want to deal with driving or renting a car at all. So we were definitely focused on property. And ultimately, she went and booked a room in the Contemporary. So we just sort of followed suit and got another one in the same tower. But they weren't next door to each other necessarily.
Right. Now, and in that situation, they wouldn't have guaranteed them next to each other, but you did take advantage of the fact that some of the deluxe resorts, including, well, most of the deluxe resorts, including the Contemporary, will allow you to put five in a room. So you had one room at the Contemporary with five and the second room with four and had beds for everybody.
Yeah, exactly. The in the Contemporary, anyway, I'm sure it varies from resort to resort, but there's two, I think it was queen-size beds and then kind of a click-clack sort of fold-down couch, which was definitely better than one of those kind of height of beds. But the fifth kid who was sleeping on that was pretty tiny and didn't have any complaints.
Yeah, you know, I will give Disney World credit. I have never found more comfortable, you know, sleeper sofas, sleeper chairs than I have at Walt Disney World. It's pretty remarkable. They do a great job with those.
Yeah, we had one at our house and it was horrible. Horrible. I always felt bad letting guests even try and sleep on it.
Well, so David, you've experienced Disney's version of the hide a bed, you know, staying in some of those DVC suites.
Yeah, and not only the rollout or the fold-out couch, but there's also a chair that sleeps one, and you know they are very comfortable, and you know they're easy to maneuver too. So if you're worried about getting them out, you know, compared to the ones that we have here at home that takes an engineering degree from MIT to get open, these are really easy to get open and put back together. So it's really family friendly.
Okay. And then, Bob, you chose a third route. You know, we had the DVC Point Rental route. We had the Deluxe Resort route. Talk about what you chose.
Yeah. For our 10-person trip, we actually got two rooms in the Alligator Bayou at Port Orleans Riverside. And the advantage of that was they had the hide a bed as well, but according to the 9-year-old who used said hide a bed, it was apparently not nearly as comfortable as the hide a couch or the hide a chair that you guys get to stay in at those at the DVC or at the deluxe resorts. Because well, said he doesn't complain a lot, but even he said that the mattress was pretty thin. And he's a taller kid, but I would say if you're over 5 foot, that those hide a beds or that's at that point they become kind of pointless for anybody taller than that at the Alligator Bayou rooms.
Now, Bob, I do have to ask, which of the trundle beds did he have? Did he have the one that pulled out from underneath another bed, or did he have the one that folds out from the TV cabinet?
The one that pulled out from underneath the other bed.
Okay. Now, I don't know for sure because I haven't stayed there myself yet, but that may have been his experience because if the time frame matches up right, I'm pretty sure he slept on one of those within about 6 months of them being disposed of.
And
being replaced.
He may feel a little bad about that then, but, you know, like I said, when that's the downfall, when your 9-year-old wakes up stiff, you don't really have a lot of sympathy for him.
They are at Disney World after all.
Yeah.
But it is true that the Port Orleans Resort, the Alligator Bayou rooms that sleep five, just in the last 18 months or so, all of the trundle beds have been replaced. They no longer are beds that slide under the bed. Instead, they fold down from the TV cabinet. They are still smaller than a normal twin-size bed. So the, you know, kind of caution about the size of the child who's going to be comfortable sleeping in them still applies. But I've heard generally that they're more comfortable, and that's believable to me in particular because I understand that there are similar fold-downs in some of the new DVC suites in the Grand Floridian. So at those prices, they'd probably better be a little more comfortable.
I should hope so.
So those are all good options, all choices that work. The value resorts will accommodate up to 8 people in, 2 rooms, and it can be a really good solution when you've got a family of 6 or 7, because, if you've got more kids than adults especially, you've got the option of adjoining rooms, and they're really good about actually connecting, getting people into connecting rooms, which gives you sort of a double size room that the family can share and access to 2 bathrooms, which is nice. I did want to go ahead and just run through the other cash options at Walt Disney World that will accommodate a family of 6. So one of the options, the least expensive option, is the family suites at All Star Music. They're the oldest family suites on property, and they're essentially, 2 standard value rooms that, they busted out a wall and made them into 1 room. They're functional, but I don't think you get the same level of theming or comfort, really, as you get in the other options. But they are, and just so you have something to compare, I pulled a random day in mid-November just because I figured that was the best day that I was a good chance I'd catch availability in all of these resorts I wanted to check. So looking at the night of November 11th, 2014, one night at the All-Star Family Music Suite would be $224 a night. The next step up from that would be a night at the Art of Animation Family Suites. Now, Bob, did I remember right that you've stayed in one of the family suites, or did you only stay in the Little Mermaid rooms?
No, we were fortunate enough. We had stayed at the Cars Wing the week after it opened for the first the first time.
That's right.
And that was where we had 7 in a room because we still had not a person with the baby being under 3. And I can't say enough good about the ability of those rooms to sleep 6 or in our case 7 comfortably, which is kind of a surprise.
Okay. So talk about about the configuration of those, because I think it really is a sort of a marvel of engineering that how they figured out to put 6 people, because the size of the room is still approximately the same as, 2 standard value rooms, but they've really managed the space efficiently.
Okay, sure. I'll do my best. But when you walk in, you've got a small table, and in our instance, it was on the right. I'm sure on the other side of the wall, it was on the left, but what have you. There's a small table on the right, and that actually folds into this Murphy bed, which, so talking about a use of space, so the bed comes down out of the wall like a Murphy bed, but during the day when you want to sit and the kids need to color or eat breakfast, it's a table. There's a couch, which folds into a hide a couch. And then there's a small kitchenette and a bathroom with a tub. That's all in one big room. And then there's a smaller lock off, for lack of a better word, master bedroom, which then has a queen or a king bed, I couldn't tell you which, and its own bathroom with shower, so not a tub. So presumably mom and dad have the lock-off bedroom, and then the kids have the Murphy bed and the hide-a couch to sleep on. And the configuration, just because of that, because of the extra bathroom, you're not all fighting. It's my turn to brush my teeth. I need to take a shower. There's 2 bathrooms. Everybody can, get ready in the mornings when you don't have all of the nitpicking and needling at each other. Right. Wonderful.
Yeah, and at $282 a night, it's not cheap, but it's pretty reasonable for the accommodation in terms of dealing with that many people and having the flexibility, really, of a separate door for the parents' bedroom and 2 bathrooms. So the next step up price-wise is the cabins at Fort Wilderness. Those are $368 a night. It's a pretty hefty step up, another, $80-some dollars a night. But they do offer a serviceable kitchen. It's not big, but it's a kitchen with a real, stove and oven. and they will accommodate six. It's a situation with a Murphy bed, another full-size bed, and a pair of bunk beds. One caution, and I've never understood this about the cabins, every bed in that room is slightly irregularly sized. I don't know if any of you have stayed in a Fort Wilderness cabin before.
No, I haven't.
But the beds are slightly smaller than regular sized. So if your family is bigger people, they're likely to feel a little uncomfortable with it. And it's true. They have a kitchen, and they also, you know, they're in that Fort Wilderness environment. So there's generally a barbecue grill out front, too. Not all of the rooms have them, but most do. That's the Fort Wilderness cabins. The next step up from that is actually a room category that even Disney doesn't publicize very well. There are actually a small number of suites at the Coronado Springs Moderate Resort that will accommodate up to six. The least expensive of those is $419 a night for this time period we were looking at. And that's a junior suite that has two double beds and a queen size bed. So fairly readily accommodates six. The prices for those suites at Coronado Springs go up in a hurry. The junior suite is $419 a night. You can step up to a Casitas suite, which is also two doubles and a queen, but a somewhat larger space, for $739 a night. Or the Casitas Executive Suite, which again is more space again and is a one king and two doubles to accommodate six, for $1,109 a night, which doesn't make any sense at all to me because that's actually substantially more than the other option that I had pulled, which is a club-level one-bedroom suite at Animal Kingdom Lodge for $897 a night. And I don't know that I could ever justify spending $1,000 on a Casitas Executive Suite if I could otherwise be at Animal Kingdom Lodge for less than $900 a night.
That's Mickey knocking on your door to wake you up, not a phone call from Stitch, right?
You know, even that, I think Mickey would have to be delivering breakfast for free.
Yeah, we basically got two rooms in the Contemporary for about that same price, and they're both tower view rooms. So,
yeah, I'm sure somebody books them. They must, because they get the price. Probably has to do with, you know, the Coronado Springs is the moderate convention hotel.
Yeah, get your company to pay for it, and it's all right.
It's exactly it. Somebody's expensing it, but in any case, that gives you the range, and it really is a broad range. I mean, you can go from $224 a night for a serviceable all-star music family suite to just under $900 a night for a one-bedroom suite club level at Animal Kingdom Lodge, and several price points in between.
Yep. I just looked up one of the all-star vacation homes I was looking at, and there it's about $300 a night, and that'll get you four bedrooms, three bathrooms, and a 10-guest maximum. So definitely off-site is an alternative price scale of its own, I'm sure.
Sure, yeah. And that's a good point. You know, we just did a show not long ago about staying off-site, and one of our biggest criticisms of that option is in the process of melting away. They have now opened the My Magic Plus, you know, FastPass Plus advanced reservation system to offsite guests as well. It's a 30-day window instead of a 60-day window like the offsite guests or the onsite guests get. But, you know, an advanced booking window, really 30 days should be plenty. The only attraction at this point that we're seeing have problems with availability that far out is the new Anna and Elsa meet and greet in the Magic Kingdom that will open in the Magic Kingdom in, I guess, late April. So, okay, so we've talked about transportation, we've talked about rooms. Let's talk a little bit about making dining plans with big groups like this. Matt, I'm going to let you go first. How did you handle dining options with a group of nine?
Well, first thing I'm sure to kind of arrange and agree upon, and this depends a lot on your group, is, you know, how many people really care where you eat, because you want to make sure everybody gets a chance to pick out their favorites or have some input. In my case, everyone was ready to just go with the flow and let me pick everything for them because they didn't really know any better. so that part was easy for us. The challenges kicked in almost immediately after that in terms of using the My Disney Experience site, because immediately I was like, oh, well, I have to make 9 people. Well, I'm going to make a reservation for 9, and I don't have any access to them, so I'll just kind of set up some ad hoc, you know, guests that will be part of that, and that'll be fine. Almost immediately after that, then I realized that I needed to link all of our accounts in order to really get the correct access for FastPass Plus management for everyone and for, you know, actually linking the dining plans to their particular accounts and everything like that. So in the end, that whole, you know, setting up some extra guests is not the way to do it. You really have to go through quite a rigmarole currently, and I'm hoping the website improves on this aspect, but linking all of your guests and both parties together is really key. And in my case, the only way I ultimately was able to do that was through going through tech support over the phone at least twice. I'm assuming you can get it done in once, but you know, they're super helpful once I finally got a human, and there was a whole lot of busy work on their end, and I'm sure they have a lot more admin access than, you know, we would do as guests. But once they had it all linked and everybody showed up together, then it was super easy. Then I just went through, they were actually able to convert my other ones into it, which was part of the time consumption. But if you link everybody first, it's as simple as just kind of picking your reservations out like you normally would for your own family, and then just kind of picking all of your people that are showing up in that family tab.
Yeah, and I will say, my guess is that you were trying to deal with either a Cinderella's Royal Table reservation or a dinner show. Am I right?
Nope, they're just standard dinner and, you know, reservation for 9, which is no problem. I think the reservation does max out at a certain size group, so that's worth kind of verifying too. I think it was like 11 or 15 or something like that.
It varies a bit by restaurant, but yes.
Right, but 9 was absolutely no problem in any of the restaurants we looked at. We did have, in fact, no character meals at all, but just for the regular reservations. They had to convert all the ad hoc kind of guests into legitimate guests on the record, and then that was all something
Okay. Now, David, how about you? How did your experience go with trying to deal with dining for a large group?
Well, some of the party were big sit-down eaters, and we were just not going to be able to manage time with meals. So we decided to have just one sit-down meal, and then the rest would be counter service. Since we're eating breakfast in the room, I will say this: when we had booked the trip, we were 7, and we had 2 last-minute additions. So trying to change the reservation was very, very difficult. And so basically, we show up the night at 1900 Park Fair, and they worked us in. But even trying to book reservations for 7. And this was a period of time when they were still doing the magical gatherings. We did not get some of the places we wanted to eat that we wanted to try. So that's ultimately why we just chose the one. And then so what we would do is we would hit counter service around 11 o'clock for lunch or 11:30, and then we would hit dinner at another counter service. That way we could still sit down, but we could be in and out of eating within 30 to 45 minutes.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, you know, one of the challenges when dining out with a group that large is that even if you do have an ADR, it just takes longer to process a group that size, you know, just to get all the meals out. And the pacing of the meal is going to be slower just because of that number of people if you're at a sit-down restaurant.
On the 10-person reservation, the other thing you have to understand is getting to your seat is going to take a while. If for no other reason, then you have to wait for 2 tables to get up from their meal usually so they can push tables together so you can sit all 10 together. So there were lots of times we show up right on time for a reservation, but we don't get seated for another 20 or 25 minutes simply because you have to wait to get not just 1, but 2 tables cleared and bussed and pushed and chairs. And so that can add a lot to your dining experience if you're not ready for it.
Yeah, I mean, David was just saying, you know, that 1900 Park Fair meal took a while, huh?
Yeah, we were there, just under 2 hours. And so we had wanted to do some other things inside the Grand Floridian. We were there during the holiday time. And, you know, it just takes a while. And people got to go up to the buffet. You know, you got to take the kids and you try to get a plate at the same time. You just have to plan that this is not McDonald's. And you want to wait for the characters to come around. And so depending on when they sit you, if you're at a character meal, you may be at the beginning of that rotation. You could be at the end, but there could be breaks in between there, and you just have to prepare.
Yeah, it's not even just character meals, right, Bob?
Absolutely correct. No, it's also Le Cellier, just for the same thing. You're cooking 10 steaks, trying to bring them all out at the same time for, you know, okay, 10. There were probably 7 steaks, but trying to get them all cooked to the right temperature to still be warm when you bring them all out. You know, there's, and kudos to them, nobody's food was cold, but to do that right, it's going to take some time. So, you know, when you book a Le Cellier 11:50 reservation and you leave and it's 2:40, you know, that makes for a short rest of the day at Epcot.
Yes, it does. Yes, it does. And it is something you just have to prepare for. You know, you can't plan the same way that you would if you were just traveling with, you know, 3 or 4 people. And the other thing is that I think you really have to make your decisions about your dining well in advance. You need to be ready at 180 days to be making reservations, because my experience at least has been with trying to get reservations for larger parties, the closer you get to the reservation time, the more difficult it is to find those larger bookings. And it's just a matter of sort of the way the puzzle works. You know, most of the tables in most of these restaurants are 4 tops. And so that's the, you know, ideal size basically as they fill tables. And so when you're searching for 6, what that really means is there have to be 2 tables available. And if you're okay, then you're okay again at 8, but as soon as you get up to 10, well, there probably needs to be a 3rd table available. And the, you know, that puzzle shuffling gets much harder the closer you get to your travel dates.
Yeah, we definitely didn't have any problem finding any of our preferred reservations right at that, you know, roughly 6 month out kind of window. But I could see where it really fill up. And the other thing definitely to agree with is that the amount of time in there. I mean, I think most of our sit-down meals were close to 2 hours, hour and a half minimum, and that was on kind of a quicker pace. So if you're trying to schedule anything right after dinner, be careful with fast passes and things like that.
Yeah, and David, you had another suggestion for dealing with those large group sit-down meals, particularly when they're not buffets, when you're going to have to order off a menu.
Yeah, you know, there are a number of places where you can review the menus ahead of time, and most of those will show when they're updated, and it's something important to remember, because if there's something that you can share with the group, unlike Matt's group, where my group cared where we ate, and so it was free, so I just sent out menus and said, you know, pick the places that you like, that you think you would eat something. Now, some of the counter service, it's pretty standard fare, but in a few places, it's not. They have something unique, and so you want to make sure that everyone buys into it rather than counter service and then deciding that someone doesn't want to eat there and make arrangements for them to have to go to another part of the park.
Yeah, there's nothing like, you know, getting everybody together, getting all set to order, and you know, kind of, it's always, to me, it's always like a battle plan when you walk into counter service like that, because you're managing, okay, you're going to take the kids and you'll head to the table and we'll meet you here. But then to have, you know, 2 people look up at that menu board and say, ooh, you know, we're just going to run to, and at that moment, the whole plan goes to hell.
Yeah, and that was one nice thing about the way they handle reservations. I mean, first of all, you can't resize your group through the app or anything like that. So if one person or 2 people want to drop out of the plan that day, you can't really change it. But as long as most of you show up or some of you show up, you can have them just ask at the person up front, and they'll be able to downsize your group if you have to change the day of.
That's actually a good point. I'm glad you mentioned that. You know, I'm generally not an advocate of overbooking. But in a situation like that where you've got a party of 8 or you've got a party of 10 and you're concerned that a couple of people, you know, might not follow through, you're much better off going ahead and booking for the full group and you know, when you go to the podium, you can say, okay, we ended up only being eight. They're not going to charge you $10 a head for the two no-shows. They're going to go ahead and seat the eight. And it's just much easier than gambling that, you know, making the reservation only for the eight you're sure of, and maybe they'll find space for the other two. Because the thing is that probably they will, but you have no idea how much longer you're going to have to wait in order to accommodate that.
Yeah, and the only way we were able to find to change the number on our reservation is to actually sit on hold and could dial in. So that's not a fun time.
Right. And generally speaking, and I know that this makes no sense at all, to do that, they actually have to cancel your existing reservation and make a new reservation. And depending on when you call, there's actually some risk that you'll cancel your reservation, and when they go to make a new one, it won't be available. We've talked really, I think, about all the major things except touring. So maybe we just touch very briefly, because we've talked about this in some detail, talking about, you know, larger group travel, but any things in particular that you guys would, you know, remind people to be conscious of when they're thinking about, you know, touring around the parks with a group of six and or more?
Sure. I would like to go first as a nod to a friend of mine. When it's mom and dad and four kids, which is what it is in our case, don't walk six wide down Main Street. That is the most god-awful, annoying thing when you're blocking traffic because you all want to, and everybody wants to be together as a family, but six wide on Main Street is just a horrible idea. It's just, it never wins. Somebody gets tripped, falls, either you've tripped somebody else, you know, or your kids get knocked down or whatever. Just two and two and two is probably a better approach to walking down Main Street versus six wide. So that's going to be my tip number one on taking your group of six.
That's a good tip. That's a good tip.
Definitely, just to kind of piggyback up before, how we had mentioned linking all the reservations. Again, to stress that getting that over with before you get into the parks and you're trying to hit it for the first day, you know, it's worth that extra call if you have to make it to deal with it before you get down there. Because once I had that set, all of our fast passes I could manage from a single app, which was really helpful, especially if some of your guests don't have their own smartphones in their family. It was really convenient to be able to manage everything through the app versus having to deal with the kiosks.
Yeah, good point. Good point.
I would say that you're not going to see everything. So you're going to need to be patient with that and enjoy the things that you do see, enjoy the time together. But a large group does not move like an army platoon. It's like parallel parking an RV, towing another RV. So
that's true. The number of times we had to have like bathroom breaks just as we were about to hit the next thing, you know, I mean, you really almost either have to build in a ton of 15-minute breaks in your plans or just accept that you're going to see about 2/3 of what you thought you would.
Yeah, that was my next notes were just whatever your plan is, it has to be fluid and you have to be patient. And then at some point on your trip, you will get split up from your group. It's not like you hope it doesn't happen. It's going to happen. So you just have to know who's responsible for who before you get split up. Like, if we get split up, I've got responsibility for these people. I've got grandma and this child and this child, and I've got grandpa and this child and this child. So make that plan before you step into a park because it's going to happen.
Yeah.
Yep. And to help with that, if there's any way you can have the parent to kid ratio be in the adult's favor, that's definitely going to go well for you.
You know, that reminds me, though, one of the other things to keep in mind when you do have that situation where you have, you know, more children than adults, you know, Bob's situation, where you've got four kids and two adults, you need to think ahead about attraction boarding. Because there are a number of attractions where the cast members are going to be a little more strict about enforcing the rules about, you know, minimum ages to be unaccompanied in a ride car. And, you know, things like, for example, you know, if you got six people on Space Mountain, you need to think about who's in which car so that you don't have all the young kids in one car together, because the CMs don't like that at all. It's a real challenge for the cast members. They really want to see, I believe they want somebody who's at least 12 with somebody who's younger.
My 11-year-old looks 12 because he's 11 feet tall, so hopefully he doesn't get stopped.
That should help.
Yeah. Even on the Barnstormer, though, I'm just looking at it, and it says children under 7 must be accompanied by a person age 14 or older, and that's on a pretty tame ride. So.
Yeah, that's 14 or older, so 14 is the age they're looking at. And, you know, it's not like they're checking ideas people get on, but, you know, really this is about both the health and safety of the kids and also the efficiency of the ride operation. I think part of the issue here is that they want to make sure that everybody can get on and off the ride safely. And so they've gotten in the last couple of years, you know, a lot stricter about enforcing that. And it's worth keeping in mind.
The other thing that I wanted to kind of mention is the idea of taking one for the team. There was a couple of times where my wife did that, and that she took three of the kids and herself back to the room early to let the one who wanted to stay out and my son go back to do late night extra magic hours. So, you know, that's another thing that can help more people have more of a vacation if you've got that one parent who's willing to do that, or if you're going with a couple of groups, have one parent babysit everybody's kids, so let, you know, the moms go out for a mom's night one of the nights and the dads go out for a dad's night one of the other nights. You know, just take that, okay, I'll do it this time because when we come back, it'll be somebody else's turn.
Yeah, not even just with touring, even with the dining. If you get a date night with, you know, your wife and you got some other adults along who can watch the kids, that's kind of how we managed to play it at least one night, which was great.
And I think that's also a way that you can help, you know, convince an older kid to maybe let the younger kids choose a few extra things, you know, that they wouldn't necessarily choose to do. And then you can kind of balance that by saying, look, just bear with us. We know that kid, that the little ones have done Small World and Teacups once already. Go with them again one more time. They're going to head back to the resort, and, you know, after fireworks, there's still going to be time for us to go and do a couple of things that you really wanted to do that they can't do anyway.
And to kind of help with that, another idea is to fork apart your fast passes if you need to, if you have enough adults to split it up that way, because you can have, you know, in a sense, rather than just thinking of it as three fast pass pluses for everybody to have the same things, you can have four and four or five and four or whatever.
Yep. Yeah, and we definitely did split some things up because there are rides that my daughter does. She's the thrill ride junkie. You know, she loves them all, and my son won't ride them. And so there are times where, you know, my daughter and I would go and do Tower of Terror, which my son refuses to do, and, you know, he and my wife would take an extra ride on Star Tours.
Yeah, and the flip side of that too, which is really convenient, is if you have split them apart and you realize everybody doesn't want to be on the same plan, there's an option in the app to merge everyone, to copy basically one plan to everyone else in the group. So it's a good way to kind of sync everybody up.
Cool.
Really? That's fantastic. I haven't spent nearly enough time with this app then.
Yeah, as long as one person has the reservations, you can basically, you know, get everybody else in there, even if normally they might have been, you know, taken up potentially. At least it allowed us to do that. So.
Oh. Well, that's convenient. I was told that I was being, you know, a bad dad when I had a reservation for my 3-year-old to ride Big Thunder Mountain Railroad. She meets the height requirement, but apparently you shouldn't put a 3-year-old on a thrill ride.
Well, that's when you borrow their borrow their magic band for a few minutes and get in there again.
All right. Well, does anybody else have any other last tips before we wrap up? All right. Well, you know, you've heard our suggestions for dealing with a Walt Disney World vacation with a family of 6 or more. We'd love to hear from you and hear what suggestions you might have. You can email us at podcast@dizdads.com, visit our blog, dizdads.com, tweet us at dizdadspodcast on Twitter, or participate in the discussions in our forums at boards.dizdads.com. And now you can also visit us on our Facebook page at facebook.com/DizDadsPodcast and even listen to old episodes of the show and some partner podcasts at radio.dizdads.com. Until next time, I've been Aaron Rittmaster with Bob Chavez.
Have a nice night, everybody.
David Nicely.
Good night.
And Matt Weir.
Good night from Minnesota.
Brought to you by Fairy Tale Journeys, an authorized Disney travel planner. Let us help you put together your next magical Disney vacation. Find us at fairytalejourneys.com. Let us sweat the details so you don't have to.
I just feel bad. I spent all this time podcasting and none of this time drinking scotch.